You know, really interesting song when you think about the words. Great groove to that song, but that's really the climate of our culture. You know, we're always waiting in stark contrast to the reality of the Lorax, where we say, hey, you know, maybe there's some change that's needed. You know, we're diving in this new series, as Eric said called Climate Change Today. We're going to be taking a look at how our behaviors, our patterns, our thoughts, the things we do every day actually impact the atmosphere all around us and the climate of people's lives. So my name's Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here at Crosspoint. Really excited you're here with us today. Before we do anything else, let's take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we can come into this place. I'm thankful that for every person that's here today, every relationship, every marriage, every individual that's in this room. And I ask God that as a result of our time here today, you would help us to see the impact of our atmosphere and the atmosphere we create every day in our lives through our patterns, through our thoughts, through the things that we do. Help us understand the potential of what it means to be in community with you and what that means for people all around us, our neighbors, in our marriages, at our schools, in our workplaces. And God, I just pray that you would use this time to grow us in some unique way. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, here's what I want us to do. I want you to stand up with me, and we're going to bring the house lights on, and grab your stuff and find a different seat. Find a different seat in the auditorium. You don't have to break up. I'm not breaking you up from the people you came with. You can stay with them. You just need to move to a different place in the room. Now, I know those of you in the back rows, you're going to hate this. You're going to hate me. You're like, oh, I'm a back seat person. Hey, you're going to get over it. It's all right. Find a different seat. Stay together as a group. And this is going to be a little tight today because we don't have as much margin in our second hour. And some of my seat is always available in the front row right here. You can take my seat. There we go. My seat. Awesome. So find a different place than where you started. Stay with your group. All right. Looks like most of you are settling down. Now go ahead and stand up again and find a different place to sit. One more time. Different place. I don't like the way that looks. Different than where you are right now. Different than where you started. Stay together with your group. Stay together with your group. All right, make sure you take your coffee with you. Don't leave that slobber cup behind for people that are sitting there after you. All right, keep your stuff with you. Grab a seat. Front row's always available. Love seeing people in the front row. Awesome, awesome. Wow, you guys are awesome. Yeah. Man, this looks great. All right, so as you're finding your seat, the book of Proverbs chapter 28 says this. It says, where there is no vision, people perish. Now this is how the King James Version, the version I usually read from is the NIV. And in the NIV it says, where there is no revelation, people cast off restraint. Now this means that you know, all throughout history, since the beginning of time, there have been teams and there have been communities of people that God has used to in and through the world, to create different climates in and through the world. And what this is basically saying is when there is no vision, When there's no cause that people are about, then basically people just fall into nothingness. And so the point of today, the thing I really want us to go after today, as we kind of launch this series, is that every community needs a cause. Every community needs a cause. Because, you know, your cause, our cause, your cause in your marriages, in your workplace, wherever that might be, actually contributes to the climate that you experience every day. And if you are part of a community that has no cause, that community eventually will dissolve to nothingness. All right, whether it's a group, whether it's a team you're on, whether it's a marriage, whatever it might be, it will dissolve to nothingness. And so, you know, it's interesting. Some of you are probably frustrated with me right now. You're like, oh, why'd you make me leave my seat? I love my back row seat. I love seeing the front row filled. I love when I sit down, I'm going to have to go find a different place too. You know, that's great. You know, but had I told you, you see, this exercise had a cause to it. All right, and had I told you what the cause was before I asked you to move, you may not have been as frustrated when you were moving. And so let me tell you what the cause was. You know, this is why you just did that. This is why I asked you to do that. This was basically to illustrate this principle that, you know, when you are with a group of people and you're moving from place to place in life, but you don't have this overwhelming sense of why you're doing it, it leads to great degrees of frustration. Great degrees of frustration. And, you know, for some of us, we're going through life and we're just confused. We're lost. We're like, why am I going through the motions that I'm going through? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Is it because I'm alone? Is it because I'm lonely, so I'm looking for people to connect with? You know, why are you here at church today? Why are you at Crosspoint? I mean, why do you show up in the seats, which we're excited about, by the way, but, you know, why do you do this? I mean, do you feel guilty if you're at home instead of sitting in an auditorium and, you know, doing, you know, semi-religious things, you know, like singing and praying and nodding off? You know, I mean, whatever it might be. I mean, why are you doing what you're doing today? You know, for the next 4 weeks, we're going to dive deep into this idea of how our behaviors, our patterns actually create a climate all around us. And we create this, and we have to ask ourselves the question, you know, what is my cause? You know, what is my about? What's that overarching thing that my life is about? And today I really want to lay some groundwork on this today. And so three things that have to do with every community, you know, whether it's this church community you're a part of, or your small group, or your work community, or the community of your marriage, whatever it might be, every community needs these, you know, those three things we have to come to realities on. The first is this: without a cause, you get bad climate. You get bad climate. Now, there are three kinds of people in this room today. Those of you who can count and those of you who can't. And, that's got a long burn on it. Just let it set for a moment, all right? Now, really, there are three kinds of people in our room today. There are those of you who are in shape. There are those of you like myself who are not. And then there are those of you who could, you know, you couldn't care less. I mean, you could care less if you're in shape. And, you know, 15 years ago, Julie and I began running together. My wife and I began jogging together. We ran about 10 mini marathons together, 500 festival mini marathons together. It started before we even got married. And, you know, when we found that there was, you know, we enjoyed spending time together running. And, and we signed up one day for the mini marathon, the 500 festival mini marathon. We were freaked out. We're like, you know, we're never going to finish this thing. We weren't really runners. I mean, we were joggers. But, you know, so we created a cause. We said our cause is to help one another finish this race the first time we signed up. Because we didn't want to be the losers, you know, that the slow bus is picking up at the end of the route, you know, because you're not keeping pace. And so, you know, we're like, so we would train together. We would run together. We would schedule how we were going to train, when we were going to train. We would schedule how we, you know, what we were eating. I mean, we were preparing. And our whole goal, our cause, was to help one another finish the race. We knew we weren't going to be setting records, all right? We knew we weren't going to be winning the thing, but we wanted to complete the race and help one another do that, and that's what we did on race day. You know, we got to the race, we were freaked out, we were afraid we were going to be picked up by the slow bus, so we're running, and if one of us had to slow down, the other one slowed down, you know, so we could be an encouragement to the other, we could cheerlead, champion, hey, come on, you can do it, you know, we got to get going, we got to keep pace, and we did, we accomplished our cause, we completed the race, we, you know, and it was like 2:13 or something like that, our first time running. Well, you know, we did this, like, consecutively for like 10 years in a row. The only thing that really interrupted it was we were having kids at the time, and Julie happened to be pregnant, you know, like our 10th year during May, so she couldn't run. And so as I look back on that, I thought, you know, in about year 5 or 6, things kind of got awry a little bit. You know, we kept signing up and running together, but we kind of lost our sense of cause. You know, by the 5th or 6th year, we're like, man, we can run this race. You don't have to train that much to run 13 miles. I mean, anybody can run 13 miles if you just try and you're reasonably in good shape. And so, you know, we did that, and we just kind of didn't train together. We weren't eating real healthy, and, you know, we got to race day, and we really didn't have a cause. Now Julie kind of had the same cause. She's like, hey, we're going to run this thing to finish it together. My cause all of a sudden became about me. It was like, I'm going to do a PB today. I'm going to get a personal best on my time today. And so, but we didn't talk about it. And so, you know, we start the race, and like 2 miles in, I've got a cramp. And I've got to pull off and slow, and Julie slows with me, and she's like, hey, come on, Kurt, you can do it. We're going to do this together. And, you know, and I get back going, and we run like the next 8 miles together, get to mile like 10 or 11, and she begins to cramp up and slow down. And you know, she's quite a bit shorter than me, and so I'm like grumbling now, right? I'm like, man, I'm doing for a personal best today. And, you know, and my legs are longer, and your, like, slow jog is like halfway between a walk and a run for me. So I can't do this. I'm like all out of sync. And she's like, just go on. You know, go ahead of me. And so that was like a license to do that. So I did. I went ahead. And you know, I thought she told me I could. Well, you know, of course, as you can imagine, that created tension. I mean, it created tension, bad climate among us. And it wasn't that, like, we have to do everything together, but we weren't clear in that particular year what our cause was. And when you're not clear on your cause, massive tension is created. Without a cause, you get a really bad climate. Second thing about causes is this: an unworthy cause creates an unstable climate. And so, you know, for a lot of us, we have causes in our life that won't last. We have causes that really don't satisfy. In some cases, maybe they're just wrong. I mean, you might be about something, you're like, oh, this is what my life is about, and yet it doesn't bring that sense of satisfaction for you. It just doesn't satisfy. And one of the places that I really see this lived out is for those of you who are in the community of marriage. And, you know, when people get married, usually there's either one of two things happening. Either they don't know their cause before they get married, or once they get married, they have the wrong cause. They have an unworthy cause. And a lot of times it's that they think marriage, the whole goal of marriage is to make you happy. Now listen. There are a lot of other places you could be and things you could do other than marriage to get happy. All right? I mean, marriage, no, that may be a part of it, but the goal of marriage is not necessarily that you're happy all the time. All right? It may be to grow you, to stretch you, to put you in community. I mean, there's a lot of things, but when we think the main goal of marriage is to be happy, let me tell you what, you're setting yourself up. That's an unworthy cause. There's something probably a lot bigger than that. And so, in fact, we're traveling this summer. I saw this t-shirt. You know, when you travel, you see all kinds of interesting t-shirts. I saw this t-shirt that reminded me of this. It said, my husband bought me a mood ring. And then went on to say something like, you know, because he couldn't figure out my mood. And so here's what we discovered. When the mood ring is green, I'm happy. And when I'm not, it leaves a red mark on his forehead. And I thought, you know, that really captures, you know, that it's pretty clear, you know, when I'm happy and when I'm not happy. You know, when you don't have the right cause for something, then whether it's in your business, in your team at work, in your marriage, whether it's, you know, in your church, if you're not on board with whatever we're doing, you know, whenever you're not clear on the cause or it's an unworthy cause, it creates a lot of instability. And then the third thing is this about causes, that a worthy cause creates a great climate to grow, to thrive, to go to new places. And so I really want to spend the rest of our time this morning camping out on this morning, on one of Jesus' teachings from the Bible that speaks to this. And, you know, sometimes I don't think we realize, you know, the Bible is like the number one best-selling book of all time. I mean, all time, regardless. You know, I know we have all kinds of spiritual orientations and backgrounds that come into Cross Point because, you know, we create a place here for you to come and kind of explore stuff on your own. And yet, you know, what's interesting is there are all of these phrases that have just kind of become a part of Americana to us that we don't realize can often be traced back to these kind of wisdom statements or phrases from the Bible. And so one of those phrases is this phrase right here, a house divided cannot stand. And Abraham Lincoln actually popularized this statement right here. People still debate today, you know, whether Abraham Lincoln was more interested in freeing, you know, Africans from slavery, and or if he was more interested in not allowing the Union to split. And there's a lot of debate on which one he was about. Honestly, he accomplished both, which is a great, great thing. But, you know, there was one speech he gave, and this speech was very, very clear that he was more interested in preserving the Union because he actually said the Union split up will not survive. It will not survive. And what he was really saying was a house divided cannot stand. And so, you know, I want us to look at the book of Mark today. If you have a Bible or your iPhone or whatever, wherever you carry your Bible, you know, you can flip there to Mark chapter 3. And these are the words, you know, these principles right here are things that come straight out of the story with Jesus in Mark 3. Here's what it says. It says, then Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him, for they said, he is out of his mind. And the teachers of the law who came down from Jerusalem said, he is possessed by Beelzebub, by the prince of the demons. He is driving out demons. Now let me pause here just a moment. There's a lot of stuff going on right here. I mean, Jesus is doing a lot of stuff. He's helping some people. Some really intense things going on right here that even his family doesn't understand right here. I mean, you know, because see, they really didn't understand his cause. They didn't really understand what his life was about. And so there was also this religious elite who really never understood what Jesus was about. And they understood Jesus was doing these amazing things, these miracles, and they understood that they could not do these things themselves. In fact, one of the things he was doing, we really don't see much of anymore. In fact, I've never seen this with my own eyes. And that's this idea of the recognition of this dark underworld, the demonic. And, you know, there's this dark underworld, kind of spiritual underworld. And for whatever reason, you know, this was much more visible back in Jesus' day. I mean, we read regularly that they see the demonic, the evidence of this dark underworld in people, demons being in people. And I've never seen that with my own eyes. But Jesus, whenever he would encounter this, he would actually go and he would remove these demons from people. He would take this very evidential example of the dark underworld out of people, out of situations. He would cast them out. And people would see this and they could not debate this. I mean, they would literally watch it take place. But what they could debate is where his power is coming from. And so basically what the religious leaders are doing, they're like, hey, well, he's doing things we can't do, but I don't think he's of God. I think he's actually aligned with this dark underworld, Beelzebub. Now, Beelzebub was like this Canaanite deity of the day. And it was this kind of, Canaanites were kind of the arch-religious rivals of the nation of Israel. And so you know, Beelzebub was this god where all these pagan sacrifices took place. And when it got translated into Latin, when the word Beelzebub got translated into Latin, interestingly enough, this is where we get the phrase, the Lord of the Flies, the Lord of High Places, where the flies, you know, live or roam. And so that's where we also get that movie that you still have nightmares from every now and then, the Lord of the Flies. And so, you know, here's what's going on here. You know, people are saying, well, you have this power, but this power, man, it's coming from the demonic. It's coming from the underworld. It's not coming from God. And here's what Jesus says. So Jesus called them over to him, and he began to speak to them in parables. How can Satan drive out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, what kingdom can that kingdom cannot stand? If a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan opposes himself and is divided, he cannot stand. His end has come. In fact, no one can enter a strong man's house without first tying him up. Then he can plunder. Plunder means rob. Then he can rob the strong man's house. So Jesus is like, come on, what are you talking about? If I'm possessed by the evil demonic spirits, then why am I about freeing people from being connected to this demonic state? I mean, how can that be the case? I mean, I'm setting people free. A house divided cannot stand. And he's like, if you're saying my community is kept with the demonic, with things that are not of God, I mean, if you're saying that's what my cause is about and my cause is about those kinds of things, then why is all kinds of good coming out of this? I mean, what he's saying here is a house divided. Hey, I am not of the demonic world. Because you see, he understands this concept right here, and it's this right here. He says, you know, you are who you do community with. You are who you do community with, right? I mean, remember in junior high, you learned that you are what you eat. Remember that? You know, it was like that science class lesson. You are what you eat. Well, you know, you are who you do community with. I mean, the people you associate with, the people you connect with, you know, these are influences. You are becoming who you do community with. And Jesus is so offended right here that the religious leaders are aligning him with this demonic underworld that here's what he says next. He kind of like ratchets up the heat all of a sudden. He says, truly I tell you, people can be forgiven of all of their sins and every slander they utter, but whoever blasphemes against the Holy Spirit will never be forgiven. They are guilty of an eternal sin. Now he says this because they, the religious leaders, are accusing him of having community with the demonic. Now, these are very, very deep things, right? I mean, we're getting into deep places that, you know, we're not going to spend much time right here, but you know, this is a part of Satan. I mean, he's saying, if you're saying I'm a part of Satan, I'm having communion with the underworld, he's saying your heart is so far gone. I mean, your heart is so hard that man, there's no hope for you. Now, I know some of you, immediately in your mind, you're like, man, I sure hope I've never said that. Hope there's some hope for me. You know, listen, you know, what he's saying right here, he's saying this is the only thing that's unforgivable in the Bible right here. And let me just tell you, let me be really clear. If you're sitting in this room right now and you're mildly concerned that you may have said that right there and there's no hope for you, let me tell you, that's not the case. Let me say that one more time. If you're mildly concerned that there may be no hope for you, and you're sitting here, that's not the case. Because if that was the case, your heart would be so far gone that you would not be able to tolerate being in the presence of this place right here. You just wouldn't. You just wouldn't. And yet he's saying some very, very pointed things right here. He's saying, don't you dare accuse me of having community with the demonic. Don't you dare accuse me of that. He's like, you're out of your mind. And if that's what you think, man, you're just out there. You're out there. Because you see, one of the things that God understands, God always has worked in the midst of communities, and there's always been this cause at the bottom of it. God always works at the midst of communities, the people we associate with, and it always has a cause. I mean, think about this. The first community of the Bible that we find is Adam and Eve, right? First two individuals, Adam and Eve, they had a cause. Now, before we had Adam and Eve, we had Adam. And God looked at Adam. He's like, whoa, this is not good that he's by himself. He's like, he didn't create you to be an isolationist. Now, you know, there's some of us in this room that are introverts. Some of us are extroverts. You know, we all get energy by being with people or being apart from people in different ways. That's not what he's talking about right here. What he's saying right here is there's no such thing as an isolationist who can grow totally on their own, totally by themselves, apart from any kind of community or connection with God. All right? I mean, think about the Colorado shootings a few weeks ago. I mean, you know, one of the things we know about any kind of mass murders, think about, what was the Unabomber, Ted Kluszewski, right? Ted Kluszewski, that's what PJ said first hour. Ted Kluszewski, remember that guy? The number one common thread among all serial killers that we've ever known or seen or experienced in our news is that they're all isolationists. They refuse to be around people. I mean, and here's the deal. We don't function well by ourselves. We were created to be in community. It's the only way we can grow. So God looks at Adam after he's created him, and he's like, oh, this is not good. It's the first time in all of history, in all of the scripture, God says something's not good. And so he says, I'm going to create a community for among Adam and Eve. It's the first community that we know. And God gives them a cause. He actually gives them a cause for their marriage, for their community together. And it's twofold. Here's the first part of that cause. The first, he says, I want you to take care of the earth. And so he's basically saying, hey, these are the first environmentalists that ever lived right here. They started it all off, right? He's like, hey, I want you to nurture the earth. And then the second cause, he says, I want you to multiply and fill the earth. So their cause was gardening and sexing. All right, that's a great cause. I mean, that's a great cause to be a part of right there. That's a cause I could be a part of. If you remove the gardening, I would love it. I could be about that every day. And so he says, hey, I want you to fill the earth. I want you to multiply. I want you to steward the earth. And that's their cause. And so since the very beginning of time, the very first community that existed, God said every community needs a cause, very identifiable cause, and this is what creates climate in the community. And the one place with Adam and Eve, when this climate begins to go south, when it begins to kind of rain on them and the rest of humanity, is when they decide to do different, something different than what God's will was for them. I mean, God said, hey, you can enjoy life, you can eat from any tree in this garden except for this one. And there comes a point where they're like, you know, why can't we choose from that one tree? I mean, we've enjoyed all the others. Why can't we do this? And they choose to go against God's will for their lives in that setting. And they say, hey, it's our way. We're not going your way, God. We're going to choose to go our way. And in that moment, their community begins to devolve. Instead of evolve, it devolves into this downward spiral. It begins to rain. The climate begins to rain all over them and all over the rest of us, because every community needs a cause. So what does that mean for us? You know, what does it mean for me to identify a cause? I mean, it's a big issue. And for some of us, I mean, we're like, I was just good getting here this morning, man. To think about what my life is about beyond, well, I want us to begin to think about it. This is a big deal right here. This is how the culture of our community, the greater Indianapolis area, actually begins to experience different things. And so a couple things that we have to think through in terms of how to create an impactful climate in our lives. And the first is this. Your cause, whatever you choose to be about, has to be beyond yourself. It has to be beyond yourself. You see, if your cause is simply about you, that is not something worthy enough of propelling change in our culture. It just isn't. I mean, take a look at verse 31 and following here from Jesus' story here. It says, then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone in to call him, and a crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, hey, your mother and your brothers are outside looking for you. And he asked the question. He said, who are my mother and brothers? He asked. Now, this is a really deep issue right here. In fact, I've had interesting patio conversations with some of my neighbors on this phrase right here. You know, understand what's going on right here. Jesus is hanging out. He's doing some serious stuff right here. And his mother and brothers come, and they're like, hey, he needs to be with us. He's hanging out with him. What's he doing? He needs to be with us. We need him to come. We need to go take charge of him, and he needs to come hang out with us. We need him to drop everything and be about what we're doing instead of that thing he's doing out there. Now, Jesus sees this, and he's like, this is a great teachable moment right here. And so he asks the question, well, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? And you know who it is? You know who it is? He says, you know, my family, they're about their own needs. They're kind of not really interested in other people. Their cause isn't bigger than themselves. They're only about what they need and their needs being, they're self-centered right now. And so I'm not really going to go be with them right now. I've got to do other stuff. And this is one of those hard places where, you know, when you get a cause, I mean, sometimes your cause causes you to make some difficult decisions. In fact, for Julie and I, you know, when we first started Crosspoint, 5.5 years ago, I mean, we realized, man, this is our cause. Our cause wasn't Crosspoint. Our cause was seeing people come into relationship with Christ and seeing people come into meaningful relationship with others. Connection with Christ, connection with others. And as we did this, you know, we even said to some of our extended family, hey, this is what we're doing. We'd love you to be a part of this with us. We'd love you to pray for us. And yet to this day, some of them don't get our cause. Some of our extended family don't get our cause. you know, every weekend around here is a big weekend. I mean, if I go on vacation, you know, four weekends a year, approximately, I'm gone 4 or 5 weekends a year, and yet I miss this place when I'm gone, but it's good to be away, and yet there are certain weekends that I never miss, things like Christmas and Easter, you know, two really big weekends in the church year where, you know, people who aren't maybe always interested in going to church will go to church on Christmas and Easter. We see it as a big impact time. And we still, even this year, got an email from one of our family members saying, hey, we're having Easter dinner at our house. We would love for you to come 2.5 hours away. And we're like, you know, we just can't do that. I mean, in case you haven't noticed, you know, Easter's a big day for us. And, you know, I work, I'm like, hey, if you want to do Easter lunch on Monday, I will be there. I'm free on Monday. They're like, oh, we have to work. I mean, you know, what are you talking? We have to work. I'm like, well, that's my Sunday. You know, and so it's like they don't get our cause. They don't get our cause. They just don't get, you know, what our lives are about. Calvin Coolidge, he said this, something really interesting, one of our former presidents. He said, no enterprise can exist for itself alone. It ministers to some great need. It performs some great service, not for itself, but for others. Or failing therein, it ceases to be profitable and fails to exist. See, Jesus and his family at this point, they were not aligned with this cause. They were out of his community because he was on mission. He's like, hey, you don't get what I'm about. And some of our causes, let's be honest, some of our causes aren't worthy. They create bad climate. They're totally about us. They're not about others. I mean, think about this. I mean, is it wrong? Is it wrong to be a part of an entrepreneurial startup, you know, where you're going to make a lot of jack? I mean, is there anything wrong with that? I mean, no, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to be about creating a positive climate in our community, you have to be more than filling your pocket with a bunch of jack. You have to be about how is this, you know, meeting a need beyond myself in our community. I mean, you know, is there anything wrong with those of you that are married? Anything wrong with wanting to be happy in your marriage? No, absolutely nothing wrong with that. And yet, if that's your cause, that you're happy, if that's your cause, then let me be honest with you, you will never be happy in your marriage. You'll never be happy. Some of you are living that out right now. You know, for those of you that have kids, I mean, is there anything wrong with parenting your kids in a way that, you know, when they get older, that it creates serenity in your life? And, you know, you never get that call at 2:00 in the morning that says, hey, we just picked up your 17-year-old on a DUI. Can you come get him? I mean, is there anything wrong with that? No, nothing wrong with that. But think about that. That's all about you parenting in a way that creates serenity in your life. It's about you. It's about an end for you as opposed to something, some bigger development where you're developing them and yourself beyond just you. I mean, is there anything wrong with having a fully, or dating life, you know, where you're dating interesting people all the time? And you know, no, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to be fulfilled in a relationship, then you have to say, what's my cause? It's more than just me having a really great catch. Right? You know, what's your cause? We have to identify our cause. Because without a cause, you know, you're gonna struggle. There's no ability to thrive. Because every community needs a cause. Which, by the way, you know, here at Crosspoint, I mean, I apologize if we've ever, for those of you who come to Crosspoint regularly, you know, if we've ever communicated in any way or given the impression that all you need to do is come and sit in the seats and take in a service, and I mean, you're going to walk out of here fired up, you know, man, spiritually thriving. I mean, if we've ever communicated that in any unhealthy or poor way, let me just say I'm sorry. I mean, we never intend to communicate that. I mean, there's a place for that. If you're new here for the first time, you know, this is where you start. Give it a few weeks. Come for a few weeks and see if you connect. But, you know, this is not going to make you alone just walking into this room feel, man, fully alive. I mean, you don't just show up to something and feel tied in. I mean, think about it. You wouldn't do that in your neighborhood, right? You wouldn't show up at your neighborhood association meeting and sit in a chair and generally listen to the conversation and watch the presentation and walk out of there saying, man, I am fired up connected to the people in my community. I have never felt more connected than right now. I mean, it's just, you don't do that. You don't do that. And yet for some reason, man, I'm just going to come in and I'm gonna feel engaged. No, it's got to go deeper than that. It's got to go way deeper than that. Which really takes us to the second thing about causes. And that's that it requires commitment. It requires commitment. You have to be engaged in the cause that you're going to go after. Now back to Jesus. I believe Jesus had a fantastic community with his family, with his biological family. And I think it came right here from this scenario here at the end of this passage right here in verse 34. It says, then Jesus looked at those seated in his circle around him and he said, hey, here, right here, remember he asked the question, who are my mother and brothers? He said, here are my mother and brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and my sister and my mother. I mean, what he does, he's like, right here, if you want to have community with me, if you want to create a new trajectory, if you want to really be spiritually fulfilled, if you want your life to take on a new trajectory, a new pattern, and go to new places, he says, if you want to do that, then that starts with honoring God with everything that you do in your life. It begins to by aligning your life with my cause, what I'm doing in the world, with making your life about something bigger than yourself. And he says, if when your cause is that, man, that's a cause I can get behind. We're going to go to great places with that. And see, Jesus' family was not his community at this point because they didn't understand his cause. They didn't get what he was doing. They wanted him selfishly for himself. Like, Jesus, come meet our needs. We want to sit with you. We want you to ourselves. And you know, I think Jesus understood something, right? I think he understood this idea right here that the greatest enemy to compassion being, you know, how you love on other people, your ability to love other people, the greatest enemy of that is self-centeredness. Thinking that my cause, it's me. It's taking care of myself. Numero uno, right here. And you know what I also understand about this experience with Jesus right here is in his life. I mean, I kind of, you know, having studied the full spectrum of Jesus' life, I also know that Jesus' family relationships actually grew from this experience right here. I mean, when he identified his cause and said, hey, you're not in it right now. I mean, I think the pain that was created with his family, with his mother, his brothers, when they heard that, and they're like, man, Jesus doesn't see us in on what he's doing. I think they actually grew right there. I think they realized, man, when Jesus is around, the climate is great. And we need to sync up and figure out what it means to be a part of that. And the way we know this is when we see at the end of Jesus' life, at the end of the spectrum right there, Jesus is hanging on a tree. He's hanging on a cross. And his biological mother and his brothers are right there at the base of the cross watching their brother and son die. And Jesus looks down at his friend John, one of his best friends, John. He says, John, here, right here, is your mother. Go take care of her. Which means, hey, she's in, man. I mean, she's a part of this cause, and now your responsibility, a part of community, is to take care of her. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture of people getting attracted around this cause. It's about something bigger than themselves. You know, one of the things I get to do, especially this time of year, is I get to meet with leaders who we're bringing into kind of new leadership positions here at Crosspoint. It's a lot of fun, and you know, meet with people whose hearts are just, you know, passionately beat in the same direction ours are. And I had a lunch this past week with somebody that, you know, I was explaining the role that we're interested in asking this individual into, and I said, hey, this is not necessarily a glamour role. It's one of the most important roles that gets carried out at Crosspoint each week because it's key to making this place go. But you're not going to be on stage, you know, giving props from everybody, and you know, but it's critical. And he looked at me across the table and he said, hey, if this is where I can bring value to Crosspoint, then I am all in. And I thought, man, this is a guy that gets his cause right here. He gets that his cause is to bring value to people. And he went on to talk to me about it. He said, you know, every day at the end of my work day, I'll rewind the tape of every conversation, every interaction, every sales call. He said, I'll rewind the tape and I'll ask myself, did I bring value to every person in my interactions today? And he kind of identified himself. His role in work is being a blocker and tackler for his business. He said, I do a lot of blocking and tackling, but I want to bring value as I do that. I thought, man, that's fascinating. And you know, our leadership here at Crosspoint, our leaders, every volunteer around here, every person that makes this place go, I mean, we often use this phrase with our leaders. We say, you know, your role here at Crosspoint is to make good things happen for other people. Your cause, one of the causes we're about is making good things with God. Create an environment for good things to happen with God, good things to happen with others. As leaders, your role is not for you. It's not for you to have some need met. It's for you to make good things happen. This is what happens when you revolve around a cause. You know, I want you to ask that question. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And you might be thinking, man, I just showed up. I barely got here. You got to figure out your cause. What is your cause? What's your life about? What's your marriage about? What's the cause of your marriage? Well, you know, why are you here? What brings you to this place? You know, is your cause something bigger than yourself? Is it tied into something more than just meeting a need for you? And when you identify that, and you will begin to go to new places. I want to give you a couple walkouts on this morning. Your connection card that Eric had you fill out this morning, we're going to raise the house lights here for a moment. And on the back side are some next steps every week. You know, we care way too much to let you just walk out the doors and be like, that's good, a little bit of motivating encouragement. Now I'm going to go on with my week. You know, we want you to walk this out through your week. And so we've given you some next steps here that you can kind of integrate into into your life this week. And maybe you're here for the first time. And for you, you're like, man, there's something connecting here. I don't know what my cause is, but what I can say is I'm just gonna commit to coming to Crosspoint for the next 3 weeks through this series, Climate Change, and see if God doesn't connect with something in my life. You know, and maybe that's your next step today. You're gonna kind of begin to try to figure that cause out. You know, maybe for some of you, you need to have an open, honest conversation about what your cause really is. What's that thing that drives you? And is it beyond yourself? Take a little time. Ask God about that. I can guarantee you, you will begin to see revelation of what that looks like. You know, there may be some of us that need to have a conversation with our spouse. And it's not like a one-time deal. It's like beginning the conversation if you're married. What's our cause in marriage? I mean, I wish somebody had told me this before I got married. I mean, Julie and I have worked this out along the way. But I heard somebody say you have to know mission, master, mission, and mate. Master, mission, mate, in that order. And what they meant is, you know, you got to first figure out who is my master. I mean, what's my master? What's the one thing that really drives me? And what's my master? And then based on that, what's my mission? What's my cause? What is my life about? And then, do you really figure out, you know, is a mate a good idea for me? And making sure you find a mate that's really on board with, you know, the master you follow and the mission, what your cause is. Because I see a lot of people whose causes are almost counterproductive. And so, you know, you might need to begin that conversation this week. You know, maybe one of the great, great ways to start just being beyond yourself. You know, we have all kinds of volunteering opportunities here at Crosspoint, ways for you to just make good things happen for other people, where your life is no longer about you. If you're looking for a tangible way, hey, we'd love to get you connected. Just beginning to serve, be a blessing to people at the front doors, you know, loading equipment in one of our kids' environments. I mean, a lot of ways to do that. And then this last one, you know, Eric mentioned at the beginning, earlier in our service, you know, we're starting this all-church journey here in a few weeks, 7 weeks. And it's going to be one of the most important things we do all year. Every year it is. And we need hosts. We need people to open their homes up. And maybe, you know, part of your cause, say, hey, I'm going to be a part about creating community for others, a place for 6 weeks. All we ask is 6 weeks, and then you can decide from there if you want to continue it or not. 6 weeks, am I willing to open my home up and let people kind of explore the topics we talk about and see if God does something through that growth and that connection with this group? You can invite your friends. You can invite all your friends. We don't care. We need 25 groups to make sure every adult has an opportunity to be in a group if they want to. It's a key part of this. Maybe you've gone to a group for the last year or 2 years or whatever. You've been in a group. Maybe now it's your turn to say, hey, I'm gonna own this and I'm going to create community myself. If so, you know, mark that. We'd love to talk to you about that. So what's your cause? I'm going to give you a moment to kind of reflect, just process a bit. We're going to sing and just really let God impress on us, you know, what he wants us to do here in our community.